This is Aiden with Oddball Pilot. This is our second question and answer period we have done. I'm up in Nome now and couldn't sit down with Mike, so I thought it'd be interesting to sit down with some other pilots and get some different perspectives on the questions. So I jetted on over to the Aero Pilot House here, which is just across the ramp from us at Ryanair. So we're sitting with some Aero Pilots. We've got Clint, Kara, Steve, John Dale, who's with Ryan, and Ben. And we're just going to go through some questions that we've received over the last month and see if we can come up with some, well, if not helpful, then hopefully interesting answers. We'll start with one that's just was a comment on the update video we shot with the Casa in the background. And I'd just like to say, yes, I do plan on shooting a video of the Casa. I haven't done it yet, and I should do it soon before I forget all the important information. So we'll get to that probably in the next month or two and be posted sometime this summer, I would guess. On to another question we've got. It's from a guy who's asking about, he started flying an AK, now he's down to lower 48, and he's interested in connecting with chief pilots at Everett's or Northern Air Cargo. And I have been in contact with Rob Everett, who's the owner of Everett's Air Cargo. And I used to fly for them in the late 90s, early 2000s. And NAC, I've been talking to a lot of their pilots, and I am interested in connecting with their chief pilot to see what they've got going on. If you're interested in NAC, I think all of us here watch NAC flying it out. And over the years, we've seen kind of their business model changed, where they had DC-6s, and now they're flying 737s. They're not just in the state anymore. They're outside the state. I don't know, were you around when Arctic was around? Arctic, you didn't know Arctic?
No,
Circle? No, it was a guy named Arctic. He used to fly for us.
Oh, I know Arctic.
Do you know Arctic? Yeah, and he's with NAC now. Mm-hmm. And I think he's down south quite a bit in Texas.
In Laredo. On Laredo in Texas.
So, flying car parts or something down to...
Yeah, to Mexico.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good gig, though.
Too on, too off.
Oh, not bad.
Sit in a hotel and wait for him to call you. That's what I heard.
That sounds like Air Cargo.
So I guess they get charters all the way like to East Coast and stuff.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Just pop-up stuff, I've heard.
It's car parts to Michigan. That's what they do mostly.
Okay.
From Mexico to Michigan.
Yeah.
Cool. Then ad hoc charters kind of as they pop up. And Everett's, of course, flies in the state of Alaska, and they've got a whole range of aircraft from Caravans, aren't there, to Tongtik Outfitters, and I believe Cherokees as well.
PC-12.
Mm-hmm. They've got a PC-12. They've still got some DC-6s, and they've got C-46s, some Brasilias, and they just added DC-9s, and they also added two Air Tractor 802s, which I believe are going to be used for hauling fuel. And I know there are some issues with...
Are they 802s or 902s?
Yeah, I think they're the 802, the Airbus.
Because the 902 will haul 1,000 gallons of fuel.
The 802 should haul 800. I heard 802s. I should look into that more. Mm-hmm. I actually talked to Jeremy.
Because there's the Air Tractor markets the fuel. Because even the 902 only has 900-gallon tank. They put a belly pod on it, so they get 1,000 gallons of diesel or gasoline in it.
Huh? I'll have to call you. The chief pilot for Everett's Air Fuel is Jim Young. And I keep meaning to call him up. That sounds like a super cool job. That would be fun.
Probably a high demand, or that everybody there wants that job.
It's probably
fly or miss for once.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of time away from home. Would be my guess. You know.
Oh, I thought it was mostly just to go from Fairbanks to Nixon Fork Mine.
So that sounds like that's the more information that I have. That's primarily what they're going to use it for.
I didn't think they got two. I thought it was only one. Mostly to go to Nixon Fork Mine.
Yeah, I had two on pretty good authority. It may be that if you're buying one, it's just worth buying two because, you know,
you got it extra.
Well, that's and you need that reliability, you know. Because if one goes down for maintenance and you can't get the job done, people get pissed off.
real pissed.
Mm-hmm. That's a 902.
That's the one at Nixon Fork.
Oh, that's right. You're up there.
What is that?
That's that. I think it's a C2 tracker.
I think the S2 tracker, but it probably depends whether it's Navy or Army or civilian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know who else uses those? The state of California's firebombers.
Oh,
they
They've got the turbine conversions.
Yeah, you put turbine engines.
Yeah, on. They were looking for pilots last year.
On Nixon Ford.
Really?
Mm. Yeah.
Except that there, I was told, there's about 50 air tankers, jobs, or pilots.
Right.
About 2 crashes a year.
Yeah.
So your odds are pretty high.
I've done a lot of looking into that industry. It's a lot of not flying.
You've looked into the crashes.
The crashes are often structural failure, of some sort. I mean, it's the P2s have the jet assisted. They run out of half gas under low lead, so those and under low lead is really flammable. So those will catch on fire, and then your wing comes off. But a lot of the planes are really old, and the high G pullouts. That's why the
turbulence around the fires.
Yeah. I'm going to do some more research into that. I've got a few contacts in the firefighting world that I'm going
to dig
up.
You started to say not flying. I thought you meant the pilot in the airplane wasn't doing a good job flying.
Oh, no.
Crash.
I think the pilots are okay, but they average about 200 hours a year of flying. There's a lot of sitting at the airport waiting.
Oh, I see.
And the new plane for firebombing now is BAE 146. That little 4-engine British Aerospace jet for the big fire bomber stuff. Not the air. They've been using the Airbus for quite a while, but that the BAE 146, Neptune Aviation and Minden Air are both experimenting with those. And I don't know how they're working out yet, but they're they need a replacement for the old fleet, and everybody's looking for it. I went off track a little bit. So here's a question, and we do get this one quite a bit. It's slowing down since the TV show's not going quite as much. Do you guys know if Wilson's looking for any pilots?
Oh, we hired just a ton of co-pilots.
Yeah, we're so fat.
Oh, just really recently?
Yeah.
Like 2 ground schools back-to-back with 20 in
each
one.
That was last summer.
Was that last summer
already?
Yeah,
we had that one with 30 past last spring.
We just finally got them all trained up.
That might be it.
We always hire a big group every spring.
And that's what I'd heard that there. You guys were looking for more.
Are we looking?
Probably because we're cycling through. We're going to need a bunch of 1900 co-pilots.
Yep.
A bunch of those guys are going into 207s.
Did anybody hear anything about Grant?
They furloughed.
15.
Yeah.
I heard that they were buying 2 planes a month or something.
Grant?
Mm-hmm.
I heard they've shut down all their operations except Kenai nearly. They're pulled out of Homer and everything.
They bought all of Penn Air's Cold Bay operation?
They did. I think they're... I don't have any real facts, so we should probably go too far into Grant. But I did hear they furloughed recently in Bethel. And I think it seems that they're having some... They're in that point they need to expand or shrink, is my guess.
Buddy of mine down there said they've got, 1 caravan, 1 207, and maybe 1 or 2 one other plane.
Right.
In Bethel.
Okay. I'm going to try to get to their chief pilot sometime. It won't be till April and just...
Well, maybe they're pulling out of Bethel because the competition's too tight. They're going to go to Dillingham and Cold Bay where there's no...
No in Dillingham.
That could be taken really.
Pinner's quit 135. So.
And King Salmon, and they can really take over. That may be it. Maybe they're inside Bethel's a saturated market, and it's time to go and then
expand the new horizons.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. Rumors are always dire, and my suspicion is they're not as that they just have a plan that we don't know what it is.
Right.
May not be a good plan, but it's a plan. I suspect they do have a plan. Cool. So that's pretty standard. Wilson's doing something, or he might be hiring people, but nobody really. The word hasn't made it out.
Like, call your buddies.
Yeah,
I haven't got that.
Well, I didn't. I heard it was a small hiring. It wasn't going to be a large hiring, and they weren't sure if they were going to do it. But it was. They were looking at it. So
there probably will be by the end of summer for sure.
Okay.
I would think.
Here's a question. Because your company, I mean, you guys are big. You've got 150 pilots now, right?
200 something.
On Hagelin's side, we got...
I was thinking the Hagelin side.
So yeah, me too.
That's
what it say in ground school? 126?
Is that what they said?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. That includes all the co-pilots
mm-hmm.
for the caravans.
Okay. Well, it seems like hiring's picked up.
Right.
across the board with like bigger airlines and people, and there's steady movement but not quick movement, not a lot.
I just got a text today. United's hiring 400 pilots and 4,000 over the next X number of years.
Okay, so I mean that's going to open up a lot of spots. I mean it's hard for management, but it's good for the pilots. So that's what I've just seen. It seems like things were really stagnant for about 10 years, and now it's just starting to. There's some movement. It may be again. When did you start flying?
Commercially in January 2003.
Okay, so you've been late 90s, early 2000s. It was. I did my ATP with an instructor at about 1,000 hours, and you know, she said, "Why are you flying up there?" She said, "I've got another 100 hours instructing, and I'm going to United or American or something." I was like, "Really?
It's American going Eagle.
It's going that one now." But back then, she was actually thinking American.
I mean,
she was like 1,500 hours, and I'm on to the majors.
I was in college from '99 till spring of '02. From '99 till 2001, things were looking pretty good.
Yeah.
We were writing reports. Pilot shortage. Yay, our lives is going to be great. And then the terrorist attack happened.
Yep, everything
shut flipped down. Up on its head and stopped.
And they'd also already overhired.
Right.
Yeah, the airlines at that point, that was like a convenient.
And the age 65.
Age 65 is kicking in.
So it pushed everything back, and that's what this 10-year holdup has been.
Okay. Yep, that did push everything back by 5 years minimum.
5 years.
Plus the overhiring that happened in the early 2000s, late 90s, and then 9/11. All that conspired to make it really bad. Well, that's good. It's going to start switching around.
You know, when I was in Denver two summers ago getting the type rating, the instructor's friend or mentor was a 30-plus-year United captain. And he came and visited us for some reason. But he was telling us, and he had actual numbers. I don't remember them. But the number of people wanting to go into aviation completely diminished.
Right.
Dwindled.
Right.
He had actual numbers. People who got their commercial license, you know, that year compared to previous years.
Right.
Just everything is just like, nobody coming in, everybody going out at the top. It's just this big
vacuum. They haven't really made it a better job for quite a long time.
It's actually a worse job.
Yeah, it's gotten worse.
An airline job.
Yeah.
Not oddball jobs.
Yeah, the oddball jobs actually stayed pretty consistent.
Right.
It pays exactly the same as it was in 1995.
Right.
No, that's like you guys got a raise recently. It's gone. It has gone up, not significantly.
Not enough to cover inflation.
And the airline gig, I need to do more research to get hard numbers on it, but it does seem like the top end pay has come down. And I know the majors have shuffled a lot of their to the smaller carriers to like, you know, they're going to the regional jets because
right.
they pay the pilots less, the jets are
right.
cheaper to fly, and it's this whole. So it's
code sharing,
carrying as many people too.
It's changed quite a bit from what it was in the 70s and well, the 80s. Everything kind of crashed too. So, but 60s and 70s, I think 50s and 60s were probably the heyday of the airline pilot.
It's probably the heyday of
everything.
Americans.
No, 20s and 30s would have been awesome.
Yeah. Southern California and 30s.
Oh, that'd have been good.
Yeah,
nobody there,
nobody
but just
there.
As nice.
Beautiful.
Oh, that would have been good. All right.
Sorry.
It's back on task here. The next question, this one this is one that I'm really interested in. It's from a guy who's worked in Antarctica quite a bit, several years. And so he's flown around to the Ken Borick Twin Otters. And he's looking at doing an accelerated zero to commercial training and maybe coming up here to Alaska. And he was looking for low-time right seat jobs, multi-engine aircraft up here. That actually fits what you guys do. So, I mean, you can. So I want to go into Ken Borick a little bit after this. But to answer his question, there are low-time right seat jobs in Alaska.
Yes.
It is actually a really good place now.
I started at 410 hours, right seat in the 1900.
That's at look Frontier. Where you are now.
10 years later, I'm
exalted 1900 captain. Wee. At the primo base of Nome, Alaska, which is one of the primo bases.
Oh, by far. We were just, Andy and I were just talking about that today.
Andy, you didn't like Barrow so much?
I liked it for the hours and everything, but it's a little bit better quality of life in Nome.
Yeah, I like Nome. And so that's one thing, like, if you go to an airline, some bases you'll fly more than other ones, and if you want flight time, you might actually look into, once you get hired and get a ground school done, if you're low time, you probably want to go to a base where you fly a lot.
Sure.
But so, yeah, so AERA hires low time people. You hire people 250, 300 hours, mm-hmm. I think.
I didn't even have 400 when I got hired.
And John Dale's at Ryan, and you got hired
got
with?
I hired with, like, 350, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
I think AERA does a pretty good job trying to get the low-timers their hours.
Yep.
I think so. They, in general.
Well, and Chris just went out to Barrow to get more time so he can move into the 207.
Right. Because, yeah.
They wanted, but he was living the good life in Nome.
He was liking it. It was a hard move.
They were saying, well, if you got everyone upgrade,
but
you
if he wants another year right seat, stay in Nome. If he wants 207 this summer, go to Barrow.
I've heard this from a bunch of people. One problem with starting in the right seat is getting PIC time. And I heard this from some Everett's guys, and well, we have an issue with that at Ryanair. And I think a lot of airlines, I hire you with 300-400 hours, you fly in the right seat, you get a couple thousand hours, but it's hard to move you into a left seat if you don't have any PIC time. Do you guys have an issue with that, or are you just...
Go ahead, Ben.
That's what our whole caravan program is about. It's not a required position, but they get them up to that insurance minimum where they can be put into the left seat at the 207, and then they start clocking up that PIC time. But we know that everyone gets hired with just their instrument commercial straight out of school, so put them in the right seat of the caravan and just teach them how to be a captain at that point.
Okay.
The operation.
That's the whole program.
Cool. So you guys aren't having a problem. The whole point is to get them...
Program is to make 207 captains.
Right.
It's the whole purpose of it. Since it's not a required position, they're there to become a 207 captain.
Right.
In the caravan, since it's not a required position, can you still log the time?
They do log the time still.
You there's, can, because they, it's in the ops manual.
Yeah, it's something about that.
You can log it.
It's all been approved.
Because I've heard of people getting jobs and then just finding out later that they can't log the time because it's... For whatever reason.
Yeah, and I was actually at Haglin when they started that program. It was Tompter's idea, who started Airport Pizza.
Matt?
Yeah. he was our chief pilot.
Wow.
He started that program, and he had that same question came up, and our POI, Bob Mercer, at the time said, you know, it's in the ops specs. It's actually it is now a required position. Or not required, but it's an official position. So, and I think you see that actually... Around the world now, you see quite a bit of caravans from almost two pilots. So
I had trouble a little bit at Frontier when I started the right seat, and I got the 2,500 hours with my little 400 and, 2,000 right seat.
You started at Frontier. Did you wear a tie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Got any pictures?
I got one. My grandma won't take off the walls. Like, God, Granny, can't you just take that one down? Oh, I'm so proud of you. Oh, no, you don't understand. But, yeah, I had lots of captains saying, yeah, you ready? You should go Navajo anytime. The Navajo instructor, check airman, all the captains. But, they still hired people over the street and just put them right in over me. Even with not that much time difference. But back then,
they could do it.
They could do it.
I think to some degree, of course, I've benefited from that quite a bit. But to some degree, that's always going to happen up here.
It's always going to happen, and that's the point you're making, is that you don't have PIC time.
Right, yep.
And I understand that now.
And
but at the time, I didn't understand.
And I fully didn't understand
the difference.
You're not understanding.
And that's when I jumped ship and came to Haglin and jumped into 172.
Oh, yeah.
I was the last one.
Yeah, nice. Which one was it? 7.5 golf.
6.4 golf.
6.4 golf.
6.4 golf.
It was a good little plane.
Yeah.
And you got some PIC time.
I started flying PIC.
Where you gain confidence.
And experience as a captain, making the decisions. It's so important. It's so different.
It actually, I think it is.
It's way different.
I think it's different, too.
It's way different.
I can't stand being in the right seat.
Well, I went back and flew for Everett after I had like 7,000 or 8,000 hours, and I was flying in the right seat. And in some ways, it was really good. The captain I flew with was fantastic. I mean, he was probably one of the best pilots ever invented in the world. But nonetheless, after a year and a half in the right seat, I think I was actually getting worse. Because you stop making, I mean, I just found I wasn't making decisions anymore.
The process.
Yes. And.
A.
All right, we won't go on that one.
ADM. I was trying to think of an official term.
But it is different.
Decision making.
It is different in the left seat. Now, if you're flying, you know, ILS to ILS, it's a little easier because everything's laid out for you. I mean, there's you don't make as many you still make decisions, but there's a piece of paper telling you what you're supposed to do.
Most of them are made in dispatch,
exactly,
and sent to your cockpit.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, so we beat that to death. I want to talk about Ken Bork. So this guy's obviously seen Ken Bork down in Antarctica, and I've got a bunch of friends who worked at Ken Bork. They're probably the largest twin otter operator in the world. I don't know how many they got, 40 or 50. They got a ton of them. And they also have a Basler, which is a turbine DC-3 that flies down Antarctica. Hmm. And I just talked to a friend of mine who was down there, and he actually responded to the accident they have, the Twin Otter. And they don't have many fatal accidents, but that was. But they do a pretty good job down there. And they work with the American program in Antarctica, and that American program goes to Greenland in the summer. So you do Antarctica in the winter, Greenland in the summer. Now, as a non-Canadian, I need to look into getting hired. I'm almost positive they'll hire non-Canadians, but I think you got to go out of your way to make it work. Mm. Convert your licenses to Canadian. And I mean, it'd be awesome. But they're probably the largest bush carrier in Canada as well. They fly all around northern Canada. They have King Airs and 99s, and you know they're like the Air Alaska of Canada. But then they have these overseas contracts. They fly floats in Guam or. Could be wrong on the Guam. They used to be in the Maldives, but the Maldivians kicked them out. Just so the Maldivian air taxi now runs all the operations down there. But so yeah, so for Ken Bork too, I'll be trying to get to the chief pilot and talk to him. Hopefully this summer. Anyone have any questions about Antarctica? It'd be awesome.
Wouldn't it be the same? Only more extreme?
Dude, it's Antarctica. What the hell is the same? It is and it isn't. They do a lot of...
Oh, you get to see penguins.
It's all stuff. You do.
Penguins and not polar bears.
Instead of polar bears.
No polar bears or no big carnivores at all. But you have
no
the transit.
Villages on Antarctica?
None. All you do is fly scientists. I mean, not all, but it's... So the way that they're different stations. You can be based in McMurdo, which is where that's the American base. You can also be based at the base camp for Vincent. I forgot the name of it. I had a friend working there. That's evidently a little more casual. It's flying the tourists, you know, the climbers and the adventure trekkers. And they could kind of have established camps. The McMurdo, you're actually working with the scientists, and they need to get to remote locations. And a lot of helicopters do the job. A lot of helicopters. They get paid.
They get paid. Yeah.
They get paid well.
Antarctica.
She'll love it.
There's probably a Russian program, which is probably really loosey-goosey. The American program, the way I understand it, it's they control you. It's very tightly controlled in terms of preventing environmental damage.
Oh, sure.
So you can't go out and go skiing. You can't go climb a peak because Antarctica's pristine. Now, every other program, oh, yeah, mate, go out, climb that peak. Just don't die. When you're working with the American program, you're a little restricted in terms of, but most people I get emails from towards the end of the season, they're like, screw it, I'm going to go paragliding even if I get fired. What are they going to do? Send me home? Anyway, Ken Bork would be Antarctica, that would be awesome. I don't know what they pay.
I just have the idea that the wind blows 40 miles an hour, it's 20 below all the time, and you don't want to do anything anyway.
Well, it's summertime. They do the summer season, which is our winter.
I gotcha.
Oh.
And then they go to Greenland for
Greenland
summer.
We're talking opposite ends of the world.
Literally, yes. And you fly to these, I mean, it's all fair.
So you're always living in an Alaska summer.
Yes.
I heard a lot of these crews go back and forth between the North Pole and the South Pole, and they usually just, like, in their winters, they have a skeleton crew hanging out there. But they'll go up to the north, back to the south, up to the north, every single year.
Mm-hmm. And the pilots...
Always forever in summer.
And the pilots are doing Antarctica, Greenland.
Does that expose them extra to the ultraviolet rays of the sun because it's 24/7 on each end?
They're going to age faster than the rest of
them. They're going to age a little faster.
You get more radiation exposure because that...
I'll get more gray hairs.
It comes in, filters all down to the poles. That's why they said in the far end that if you operate above 71 degrees that you can only fly for so long. Or something like that.
What?
What?
You guys ever see that in the regulations?
No.
It's in there. 135 or something.
Oh, man, you got those. I'll have to look that up, too.
I'll go get it.
Cool. Actually, where do you learn how to fly?
In Galena.
Oh, Galena. That destroys my theory.
Why is that?
This leads to the next program. The actual question this guy had is about training programs, and he asked about the one offered by ATP, which is one of those accelerated programs, 6 months, zero time to ATP, and they put your right seat in, you know, a little commuter plane making $18,000 a year. And he's wondering about the advantage of doing a program like that versus an advantage doing like a small airport. Was it Part 91 flight schools?
61.
Yeah, it's been a while. So 61, Part 141, or whether it's maybe a college-type atmosphere like University of North Dakota or South Dakota?
UND.
UND, you know, North Dakota. So mm-hmm. University of North Dakota mm-hmm. and Embry-Riddle in Florida and Prescott. And there are a bunch of other programs now that have four-year degrees as well. Mm-hmm. Spartan, yep.
Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
So
Laterno. Yeah. Texas. Laterno is huge.
Is it?
Yeah.
So I just want to do a quick survey of us here. So, Clint, how'd you get your license?
Oh. Private to now.
Not to now.
I went to UAA.
UAA?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a four-year program?
Four-year.
Okay, so you got a college degree mm-hmm. out of it. Roughly, what did that cost you?
I have no idea.
Okay, all student loans?
No. U.S. Army.
Oh, good call.
GI Bill.
Good call.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good program now, too. I know a lot of people getting out are doing helicopter fixed wing. They're running up, you know, $100,000 worth of flight training.
No idea.
Yours was probably
a little... just paid the bill.
That's awesome. That's a good way to do it. Just cost you 4 years of hard
three
work.
Three and a half, yeah.
Cool. That's a good program.
I signed up for three, but I was like, I want to go airborne. Okay. Extra 6 months for training.
Well, that's good. You got to jump out of an airplane.
Yeah.
And you got the GI Bill.
Yep.
Kara?
I learned at Mom and Pop's at Merrill Field.
Take flight?
Aerotech.
Aerotech. Mm-hmm. Cool. So that's basically a part 61.
And 141, but most people do it 61.
But a small program.
Yeah.
And that worked out. And you did rough. I mean, I just go rough here. You're thinking 50, 60 grand.
About, we'll say 50.
Yeah.
And about 3 years.
Okay. So it took 3 years.
Yeah.
And yours, of course, took four. Steve, where did you do yours?
I started when I was 16.
All right.
So, you know, I got private when I was 17 and then spread it out over the next 6 or 7 years.
So you just did part 61.
All of it was 61, yeah.
Cool. John Dale?
Small schools.
Oh, yeah.
One instructor.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to that because I've got a theory on, I think a lot of it's personality types on what type of flight school you should go to.
I went to Spartan in Tulsa, and I got my private instrument and commercial, and the program they have was set up to where when you're done, you'd have a four-year degree as a professional pilot or business management or something like that. But I got to a certain point where I just ran out of money and had to go to work.
Right.
So, but it was all Part 141. It was, for the most part, it was pretty good. I got passed around quite a bit to different instructors just because a lot of guys would come through and hit their number and then they're out, you know.
Oh, hit their, and you have to go on to commuters or somewhere.
Yeah, so that was a bit rough because you'd get comfortable flying with somebody and then they'd bounce.
Right.
Pretty much meet somebody else. They just kind of throw you to the next instructor. So that was kind of rough, but I ended up spending I have less than a year left in my bachelor's degree, but I probably spent around $100,000.
And that was towards, it counted as a college degree,
yes.
Working towards it.
Correct.
Okay, so you're $100,000 in without finishing, so you would have been 140.
Yeah, by the time I got done with my, if I stayed there to do my my multi-engine CFI, I would have continued to accumulate debt, and I just didn't feel comfortable with that. Before I went to school, I was debt-free.
Right.
And just to have that much hanging over my head, it's like buying a house and not have anything to show for it.
That's why it took me 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I paid as I went along.
Yep.
Yep.
And then you get out debt-free and
debt-free, yeah.
And then your first flying job, where did you start?
Aerotech.
It's flight instructing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got your job at the place.
Yeah, at the flight school.
Making $15 an hour or something.
Oh, God, what was it? I can't remember.
But that's why it's good to be, if you're debt-free, but your first job flying, you're not going to make a ton of money.
Exactly.
I would have been, it would have cost more, but while I was going to school, I came up here and started working for a cable company in the valley, and I would do that all summer, and then because summer flying in Tulsa is just wicked.
So you were kind of paying your way as you went to something.
Otherwise, I had friends that were out two bills.
Right.
That just went to school and didn't work or anything.
I can't.
And that's, I couldn't sleep at night if I had that much.
Yeah. And Ben, you did it in Galena.
I got my private in Galena, yeah. I started in gliders and then went on to airplanes and got my license at Galena, at the Galena Interior Learning Academy there.
Uh-huh, yep.
So if you're young, like high school age, and you're a resident of Alaska, you can apply and go to the school and you'll get a free pilot's license out of it.
Oh, awesome. I think the one at Bethel's similar, but maybe harder to get into.
I think that one's set up for the local natives.
Right, yep.
Yep.
Yep. That did you, yeah, exactly.
And cool. Instrument was over in Germany, and then commercial was in Florida, and then twin stuff was back up here.
So kind of banged around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like the starting of the gliders? I mean, of that, I think it gave a good background.
Oh, man. The big thing with gliders is it helps you with landings.
Right. Yep. You don't...
Can't go around, you got one wheel to land on.
Yep.
That's the big thing.
Well, that kind of ties in with the second part of this question. Is for like this type of flying up here, you think of a less conventional school might be useful, like getting a glider rating. Because I think most of these bigger flight schools, there's heavy emphasis on crew resources. And instrument flying, glass cockpits are pretty common these days. And maybe less on the hands-on flying part. So do you think this, like flying glider, that gives you a good background to fly a 207 up here versus maybe a more airline-centered training program?
I think gliders is a really good start into flying.
In general.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper, too.
It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm going to follow up with this. Mike and I, when I was down south, we called up a student at Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach and talked to her about her experience at Embry-Riddle. And to start with, she thought it was awesome. She thought it was great. Most students there are looking towards the airlines, partly because there is a large debt incurred, and the airlines are the final big payday. But as we all know, it takes a long time to get to the airlines. I think the average is probably 10 to 15 years from when you get your commercial license to when you actually might get hired. Most airlines do require a four-year degree, so if you want to go that way, a four-year school might be good. If you're not interested in the airlines, the four-year degrees aren't bad. I've worked with a bunch of people who went to Embry-Riddle, and they're actually usually really good pilots. They're usually really good at the FARs. They usually learn the airplanes, the book side of the airplane, really well. And honestly, the guys I've flown with, it was all guys at this point, they were good pilots. So I'd have to say the training is good at these bigger schools. My opinion is that a lot of it depends on the personality. I couldn't have done a four-year school. And I even changed small flight school. I went from one where I got my private, and then I had to switch instructors, and I didn't like the next instructor I had. My guy had my private I liked, and he actually contacted us on the website, which was cool. But then I switched to a smaller airport and found an instructor I really liked and kept him all the way through my commercial. And I thought maintaining the same instructor was really helpful. Yeah. Yeah, John Doe, you're saying you're jumping around from instructor to instructor just...
Yeah, I probably had 10.
Yeah, so you don't... Because every instructor has slightly different parameters, just like flying with different captains. Everything, of course, everything is, you know, set the same in theory, but there are little quirks that a different instructor might have, just like a different captain. John Dale thinks this is a fucking asshole. So I think it depends on your personality and where you are in life. If you're 18, 19, and you don't mind incurring some debt, or you have some money, maybe the four-year college that will set you up in a flight school, or set you up for a college degree and a commercial pilot's license might be the way to go. If you're a little older, I suspect not.
I really recommend if you're young, go the military route, because you get paid the entire time while you get free college and free flying, and you get job experience, you're getting income, getting education.
So you're thinking military pilot route?
Not military pilot route.
Okay.
If you're young, take an enlisted route, you're getting a paycheck, you're getting work experience, you get free education and free flying, and you'll come out with a license at the end and a degree with zero debt. With actually money in your pocket.
Right. And if you go the pilot route, most of those are 10-year commitments.
Yeah, that's too long.
Which is a long time. And you don't... The military, it's great, but you fly... You'll get out of those 10 years, you'll have about 1,000 hours.
Yeah. You're not going to fly that much.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing. The training is amazing. It's probably some of the best flight training in the world. But you don't... If you're in the military, you're in the military. That's your first job. And your actual flying part is kind of your secondary job. Most military pilots have a...
I mean, the idea is that a 300-hour pilot can take a fire jet and put it on a deck of an air carrier.
Exactly.
So it's very intense.
Well, that's where the airlines are going, too. All the foreign airlines are training 300-hour pilots to fly jumbo jets, so...
And they've been doing that for years. Yep. I mean, when I was flying, they'd fly up from San Francisco in a King Air, start off in a crew.
That's where my dad worked.
Really?
He worked for that JAL.
Huh. I might have fueled his plane once.
Alaska, yeah.
So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but I think it...
What was
and he's asking again? About... It's about different types of flight schools. He's thinking like tailwheel and float plane certs at the smaller flight schools. I think all that's valuable for this type of flying.
The other thing I was going to say is if you want a four-year degree and you have a way to get it, don't get it in aviation.
Well, now here's the... Talking to the Embry-Riddle student again, it's like Embry-Riddle, you don't have to do the flying program. Mm. You can just get a four-year degree. And then it's actually a really good four-year college. Mm. And I did more looking into that. I talked to Mike Singer. And Embry-Riddle is a good four-year college. It's not... So if you're going to do a four-year school, Embry-Riddle is not a bad choice. It has an aviation bent. You can still get all your ratings at a private school.
Isn't that a private school, though, Embry-Riddle?
Private college. It's going to cost you...
It's a lot of money.
A four-year degree would be about $100,000.
It's not like going to that...
Letourneau's a private college.
Yeah. Well, you can go to a state college, and I know college tuitions have gone up, but if you're going to go
it's
to
like $20,000-$30,000.
The reason I had to take a four-year degree is because that's the requirement of the GI Bill.
Oh, yep. And that's the difference, too.
To get the flying paid for, you have to be in a degree program.
Right.
But the school didn't have their own plane, so they contracted to Aerotech.
Oh, got it.
So I actually went to Aerotech, which was a mom-and-pop school, which was great.
So you got sort of the best of both. So you did UAA, but you did your flight training with Aerotech.
Yeah, but once the VA money started kicking in, the owners were so out of date with no computers, they had a bad experience with the government. They had a bad experience with the government. They wouldn't take the government money. They wouldn't take the money. And so I had to get a waiver to go to Take Flight and finish everything at Take Flight, from instrument to CFMEI.
Aerotech's out of business.
So is
Take Flight. Yeah. I know there's one left over there now. They're doing helicopters.
Who?
Land and Sea.
And there's
Land and Sea.
Land and Sea.
That's the only one that I know of.
Yep.
And there's did Merrill take or Merrill did Field, Take Flight yeah. become Land and Sea?
In their VA?
I don't know that much about it.
Their VA?
Who?
Land and Sea.
I have no idea.
So let's go on to let's move on to the next question. And so I often talk about scraping for cash in the oddball business. Does that mean you can't support a family? Does my spouse have to work? Well, I don't have a spouse. It depends on what your job is. Starting out, I think all the FOs here can attest the pay is pretty abysmal. I don't care where you go. As a first officer, your first year or two, it's going to be pretty tough. Now, I think these upper-end jobs, if you stay in these smaller planes and find the right jobs, you can make a decent living. Ryanair, if you're a CASA captain, if you stick it out, you make decent money. Era, once you make a decent living, I mean, you got your ranch going on, you're going to be gone a lot is a big problem with these jobs. Almost all of them, you're going to be gone from home a significant amount of time. But you can make good money, but when you start, you're not going to make a lot.
It's a sacrifice.
Yeah, and that's with any aviation. It doesn't matter whether you're going to the airlines or where you're going. The first few years are pretty lean. And then depending on the choices you make, it might stay lean a long time. The last 6 years, I've been scraping for cash because I've been flying part-time here and there and guiding and living in my truck, and I've been screwing off. When I was actually just working for Hagelin and steady two on, two off, I had a decent amount of money. And I think the range will go from like a long-time Alaskan pilot, air taxi pilot. It's going to be somewhere between 60 and it can get up over 100 grand a year, depending on the job you pick and how much you want to work.
How much you want to work.
A lot of it's how much you want to work.
And don't send me to Barrow. Yeah. I'm happy right here.
What if you
making a little less?
If you do this work long enough, at some point it does become about lifestyle. And when I did my two on, two off and took my days off, I was much happier than when I'd worked 3, 4, 5, 6 months in a row and hated aviation and everyone around me.
Yeah. I agree. If you work a lot of extra days, you just burn out.
Yeah.
And this has been the easiest winter, or this past winter. It's like commuting down south, having the time off,
yeah,
being actually, in sunshine, and then coming back and working 2 weeks is like nothing compared to living in Bethel full time for 7 years.
Oh yeah, I can't live in Bethel that long.
I think it's kind of they kind of sell you the pipe dream of, yeah, you're spending a lot of money now in flight school, but when you get out, you're going to get a job with the airlines, you're going to be all set eventually. But they don't talk about like the only jobs down south that you could find are with Great Lakes, where you're making $18,000 a year. And so for me, I had to come up here in order to pay my debt and have a life, you know.
And that's actually a good other point, is that lower 48, these jobs aren't going to pay as well. Mm-hmm. When you come to Alaska, these jobs are necessary to actually support life out here, pretty much, and to pay. Well, a lot of it's bypass mail supports a lot of these jobs, but it. And you can find this in other spots. You go to Papua New Guinea, I think, pays really well. Mm. You feel pretty darn well. DOD contract work pays really well. And these all fit in unconventional categories. So it depends which path you want to take. You know, once you get somewhere around 5,000-6,000 hours, which is probably 5-6 years into your career, you're valuable enough that you can start making choices about where you want to go. And pay can be part of that choice. So on to the next question, which is going to hit close for a lot of people. Somebody who's finishing up at UAA, and they're going to start looking for work. And they're asking about AERA, which we've covered, the Caravan Co-Pilot Program. But they're wondering the best time to start looking for work in Alaska. And I would say right now.
Get your application out in February.
Exactly. I think that's...
What was ground school in March?
Yeah, there's usually ground schools in spring and fall.
They want to roll you into the summer. They don't want you flying in the winter to start out.
That's pretty. Most people don't want to start you in the winter. Mm-hmm. And I would also say, decide where you want to work and start making those connections early. like even before you have your private, you can go talk to, let's say if you want to end up at Linden or Everett's, go talk to the chief pilots. All right, Clint, what do you got?
I was living on 33rd in Wisconsin, walking my dog in the park across the street. I ran into a guy walking his dog. It was Van Sassanaski.
Next thing you know, you had a job.
It was interesting.
Our assistant chief pilot at Ryan, same way.
Yeah, I was in school. He's walking, hello, how's your dog? My dog's great. And they meet, you know how it goes. And then
little butt sniffing, everything's
good. Yeah, everything's good. What do you do? Oh, I'm flying out in Bethel. Oh, yeah, I'm in school. Oh, yeah, give me a call when you're done.
That's exactly how Charlie got hired.
Being in the right place at the right time.
And so many of these jobs are based on knowing the right person. And so it's never too early. Don't kiss ass, but it's never too early to go by an office for any of these air taxis. You know, learn something about the air taxi, pick one you like, and then go talk to the chief pilot and ask what they're looking for. Come back 6 months later, give them another resume and say, I've added this, this, and this. And as your resume improves, just keep talking to them. And it may take a couple years for the bigger airlines, than Everett's Air Cargo or Northern Air Cargo or Linden, but they will remember you from the beginning if you're showing up every 6 months, and you will get on unless you screw something up. So it's never too late, but the air taxis in general hire spring and fall. Seasonal work obviously starts in the spring, but they're looking now. Right now, they already have people in mind for their positions.
Most of the seasonals, is it right about the first week of May, they have their ground schools.
They usually start somewhere end of April, beginning of May, and then they start working mid-May or June, I think. And for seasonal work, I'd look into the Talkeetna jobs. Around Anchorage, there's definitely work. And then Southeast Alaska has a ton of seasonal
work. I'm looking for an Anchorage job.
Well, I just heard a guy post on our Facebook page that down in Southeast that they're looking for a 206 star driver on floats down there this summer. So I know the float operations have been chronically short in the summer. So they will hire a lot lower time than you think, especially if they know you. So to finish that up, the Aero Co-Pilot program is great. Ryanair also hires low-time co-pilots. Plug in for us there. Cost of time, twin turbine, might be a little more valuable, but it might take a little longer to get to the left seat. So we've on to a couple of quick questions here. One question's from someone who attended our slideshow, and he's asking about the Skytruck, which we've got a video of the Skytruck taking off at Dolpa. I'll probably write something up about that on the either the network or on Oddball Pilot soon. We'll certainly have the video out there at some point. But it looks like the Skytruck is the PZL M28. It's a Polish airplane, a Polish STOL light plane. It's a pretty cool plane. I'll show you the video before we leave. So that one may not make it in there. We'll skip that one. I'll email them. Here's a question. I get this a lot. I mentioned to some guys from Europe or Russia who are flying up here, and did I know how they managed to get a work permit? This is someone from Austria who got their commercial in Florida, and they want to come up here and fly. And I have known a lot of people from Russia and Europe who have flown over, not a lot, but a few. Does anybody here know someone else who's a non-U.S. national who's flown up here?
I know people have done it. I don't know how.
Their names.
What about Magnus?
There's Magnus.
Yeah, exactly. He's from Sweden.
Isn't he a U.S. citizen, though? Even he's from Sweden? He has a citizenship here.
I don't know.
A lot of pilots end up marrying someone. That's how they get their work permit.
What about Vince?
He joined
Vince
the U.S. military.
He joined the military from Hungary.
That's right. Yeah.
And he when you join, you get an accelerated program to a citizenship.
Right.
You don't get automatic citizenship. You still have to apply. You still have to go through all the same stuff application wise. But you're accelerated to. You don't have to wait 8 years for your citizenship.
Right. We had when I was in the Marine Corps, we had some guys who were doing that. They're like Puerto Rico, and that's a good way to become a U.S. citizen, I think. I don't have a good answer.
Except he did 2 tours in Iraq and 1 in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it used to be a good way.
Gabriel that followed us to the... He's from Italy.
He's from Italy. What's he doing?
I don't know how he's doing it, but
yeah,
he'd be
I should
a good person to ask. Do you know him?
I got him on the network.
I'll
have to send him a message and ask him.
Gabriel, I forget his last name.
I've had a bunch of people I knew. Most of them were married to Americans. Getting the work permit's a federal government issue, and it's not going to relate to your pilot's license at all. So that is a big hoop to jump through. And there are enough American pilots that there aren't many companies that are going to go out of their way to help you get a work permit. You know, unlike if I go try to get a job in Papua New Guinea or somewhere, work permits are also an issue, but there don't have any pilots. So the company will work with you and work with the government if they can. I think Papua New Guinea, it's tougher, actually. Mm. Most of the overseas jobs, most of the foreigners do 30 to 60 days on and then off because they can't stay in the country for longer than that. Mm. And they had this issue with Linden, too. It was the same thing. They're flying over there.
Right.
And they need to get out because they can't just stay there for 3 months. They have to leave. Mm. Yeah, because
the whole company?
The pilots do.
Oh, just the pilots.
Just
pilot.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually have a Papua New Guinea based airline now.
Visa,
so part 121 Papua New Guinea outfit. So at any rate, guys, I'd like to thank everybody for sitting down and answering these questions. It was kind of wordy and windy, but we hope we got some of those questions answered. And thank you for listening. This is Zayden with OddballPilot.com.